Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 24, Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation, text number 51. Jano jana syadi shate satim gatim. Yaya pravadyeta duratyayam utamaha. Tvam tvavyayam jnanam amoga anjasa. Prapadyate yena jano nijam padam. Jana. A person who is not a bona fide guru. An ordinary person. Janasya, of an ordinary person who does not know the goal of life. Adishate, instructs. Asatim, impermanent. Gatim, the goal of life. Yaya, by such knowledge. Prapadyeta, he surrenders. Dharatyayam, insurmountable. Tamaha, to ignorance. Tvam, your lordship. To, but. Avyayam, indestructible. Jnanam, knowledge. Amoga, without material contamination. Anjasa, very soon. Prapadyate, achieves. Yena, by such knowledge. Jana, a person. Nijam, his own. Padam, original position. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A materialistic, so-called guru, instructs his materialistic disciples about economic development and sense gratification. And because of such instructions, the foolish disciples continue in the materialistic existence of ignorance. But your lordship gives knowledge that is eternal. And the intelligent person receiving such knowledge is quickly situated in his original constitutional position. Purport. So-called gurus instruct their disciples for the sake of material profit. Some guru advertises that one meditate in such a way that his intelligence will increase in regard to keeping his body fit for sense gratification. Another guru advises that sex is the ultimate goal of life and that one should therefore engage in sex to the best of his ability. These are the instructions of foolish gurus. In other words, because of the instructions of a foolish guru, one remains perpetually in material existence and suffers its tribulations. But if one is intelligent enough to take instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as enunciated in the Bhagavad Gita or the Sankhya philosophy of Kapila Dev, one can very soon attain liberation and be situated in his original position of spiritual life. The words Nijam Padam are significant. The living entity, being part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has the birthright to a position in Vaikuntha Loka or the spiritual world, where there is no anxiety. Therefore, one should follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Tyaktva Deham Panarjanma Naitimam Eti Sarjana. After giving up one's body, one returns home back to Godhead. The Lord invites us, the Lord lives in the spiritual world in His original personality, and a devotee who follows the instructions of the Lord approaches Him. Mam e what is that? Mamiti. As a spiritual person, such a devotee returns to the personality of Godhead and plays and dances with him. That is the ultimate goal of life. Materialistic so-called guru instructs his materialistic disciples about economic development and sense gratification. And because of such instructions, the foolish disciples continue in the materialistic existence of ignorance. But your lordship gives knowledge that is eternal, and the intelligent person receiving such knowledge is quickly situated in his original constitutional position. Matirna Krishne Parataksatova Mitobi Padyeta Griha Vratanam Adanta Govira Vishatam Tamizram Punak Punascharvita Charvananam. So Matira means our consciousness. So generally speaking, people don't know where to put their consciousness. Of course, everyone has the same goal. It doesn't matter who they are, because we are eternal and our nature is eternal. Therefore, we always have the same goal wherever we are and whatever we're doing. We have three goals. Does anyone know what the three goals are? Besides eat, sleep, mate, and defend? But they're also part of the goal. What are the three things everyone wants? What's that? Well, we wish that was true. Yes, everyone wants to be happy. And how long do people want to be happy for?
Forever.
Forever. And how do you become happy forever? What do you need to become happy forever? Well, the body helps. We're not against the body. After all, if we didn't have a body right now, what would we be doing? Floating around as ghosts. Hopefully friendly ghosts. What do we need besides bliss and eternity? How do we get bliss and eternity?
Knowledge.
Knowledge, yes. At least we know that much. So we're trying to get knowledge of how to become as happy as possible for as long as possible. And that's called Krishna consciousness. Now, everyone is looking for the same thing. Everyone is looking for knowledge of how to become as happy as possible for as long as possible. And some people, as it says here, they say, someone advertises that I have the secret how you can be as healthy as possible for as long as possible, and therefore become as happy as you can possibly be in the material world. And indeed, compared to the person who's not healthy, they're relatively happier for a relatively longer period of time. Then, of course, it mentions here sex life as the ultimate goal of life, that the ultimate happiness in the material world is sex life. And therefore, if one can squeeze all the happiness he can out of this body as possible for sex life, then one can say that this person's teaching me how to be happy. Unfortunately, it doesn't last very long, and the result is quite a bit of misery as a result. In any case, the question is, who has the actual formula for happiness? Now, most people think we're crazy, and indeed a lot of us are. They're not completely wrong. But we don't want to stop being crazy. We want to become crazy for Krishna. So we may be crazy. We may not know what's going on at all. If you ever see the movies of 22nd Avenue, did anyone ever see those videos of the devotees being interviewed in 22nd Avenue? Yeah, they're very interesting. You can see that they weren't exactly scholars in the science of Krishna consciousness. One devotee was asked, you know, what is your philosophy? And this boy says, our philosophy is that everyone is a gopi. And that our spiritual masters helping us become a gopi. And etc. That was part of the interview, one of the interviews that I made. And because knowledge has to be acquired gradually, it is not that knowledge is just, you just hear something and you get enlightened. Obviously, if that was true, everyone would be enlightened already. Because after 2 weeks, you practically know at least externally all the philosophy. And after 20 years, you hear the same thing again and again. We're not this body. I think I heard that before. Krishna is God. I don't know where I heard that. I'm sure I heard that. And that in order to realize that, we had to perform devotional service, whatever that might be. So after some weeks, we hear it. So then we think, oh my God, if that's all there is to this philosophy, it's the same knowledge again and again. I think then Time Magazine and the newspaper and everything else seems a little attractive. It's new. Who died today? What country is at war with who? What's the price of oil? Something new. Therefore, knowledge is only superficial if it's not backed up by perspective. As I've said many times, and just like we eat a meal, and at the end we're just as hungry as when we started. And they have those meals nowadays, by the way. If you go to a movie theater, they have a certain chemical in the popcorn that the more you eat the popcorn, the hungrier you get. So they make a lot of money from the popcorn, especially when they put a lot of salt on it. Then you get thirsty and have to buy the drink. So by the time you spend 10 euros for the movie and you spend 25 euros for the popcorn and for the drink. So similarly, if we hear and we don't digest what we're hearing, then after a while we stay hungry. We don't learn anything. Therefore, as Prabhupada said, an elephant eats this much, and he passes this much stool. So at the end, he weighs about the same. So in the same way, if we hear something, it is better to remember a little than to read a whole lot. Just like it's better to digest a little food than eat a whole lot and not digest anything. As a matter of fact, if you eat a lot and you don't digest anything, you lose energy trying to digest it. Like if you're really hungry and you eat a rock, your hunger is going to be satisfied temporarily, but it's going to take a lot of energy to digesting that rock. So you may not be hungry for a couple of months, but you haven't got any energy from it. So similarly, if we hear philosophy and we don't digest it, and how do we know if we digest it? Number one is that we remember it. And number two, as we hear philosophy and from many different angles, points of view, then we can actually see it with our eyes, what's being said. That's called perspective. Now our philosophy, many times, people don't like to hear it. They think it's boring. Oh, Bhagavad Gita. You know, oh my God, so much philosophy. Something about Dharma Kshetra, Kuru Kshetra. You know, they're speaking in tongues. But actually, our philosophy is about bhakti, is about ultimately about love. But we can't understand love, what actually prema means, unless we understand in our present position what's preventing us from achieving prema. So we can see the gopis dancing with Krishna. We have so many pictures. It's like someone walks in here and they say, there's Krishna with this lady. And she's surrounded by women. Only one class at a time. He's surrounded by these women. These people are not completely out of it. They're into something here. Then they look at the next picture. Oh, Krishna is with a cow. How sweet. And he has friends. Black and white. Black men and white men are together. Socially up to the times. And then you look at the next picture. There's this woman bowing down before Krishna. My God, what is this? This is questionable socially. And then there's other people dancing. These people seem pretty mixed up. But, you know, they got some good ideas. Then they come over to that poster there, that written thing. I think they put it over here now. List of duties, offenses. Oh, that one is no illicit sex. Like, what are they talking about? No meat eating, no gambling. The first thing people walk in, they read it. What are these people thinking? No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. My God, what's wrong with these people? One time in Australia, Prabhupada was giving a lecture very heavily, you know, Prabhupada was speaking quite heavily about the four regular principles. And then he said if you eat meat, eventually then they'll kill you. And one hippie walked in the back of the room, and then Prabhupada said, if you have illicit sex, we'll kill you. And he ran out. He turned white. So these things have to be put into, some knowledge has to be there so that people can see what the value of it is for their own personal lives. Perspective doesn't mean we can very easily see what everyone else, what the author is speaking. But if we're actually in tune, if the author is in tune with us, then he can help us see things better for our perspective. Because we're not about to change our whole vision of things. As they try to do at 26th Second Avenue, you know, after a week of being in the temple, this boy is thinking, I'm a gopi. You go, oh, I'm a gopi. And on television, that was, that's what the television was, it was that's what our reputation was. Oh yeah, the Hare Krishnas, they're a bunch of gopis. Actually, that was when I first joined, when I was first going to my friends were living at 26th Second Avenue. And when I asked them, this is in the beginning of 1968, I asked them what they were doing. They said they get up in the morning and they raise their hands and they sing in the morning before the moon comes up. So I thought, my God, my friends have turned into moon worshippers. And then when I was going down to visit the temple, we were calling all the ladies gopis. The men weren't gopis, by the way, luckily. The women were gopis. And the men, they all dressed in sannyas outfits. So we had the renunciates on the one side, and we had the gopis on the other. But there was no division between them, you know. The only lady who would preach to me at that time was, her name was Balai, because everyone else was out collecting. In their rather unique way of collecting donations for the temple. And Balai was the only one left in the temple, so when she would tell me about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. She's still in Los Angeles. In any case, so it takes time to get the proper perspective on things, to actually look around and see that this world is actually made out of the same elements that Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, that there are souls. What's making the world alive is not the air moving, it's the actual souls within the bodies, and that there's intelligence behind everything because Krishna is everywhere, and everyone's getting exactly what they deserve according to what they desire. So that perspective means, for instance, then we start trying to control our minds. Because if we desire the wrong thing, we get into trouble. And we desire the right thing, we get rewarded. Most of the people don't know what they're desiring. Matter of fact, most of us don't know what we're desiring either until we start chanting Hare Krishna and we become a little awake. We say, my God, my mind, I'm chanting. And it's agitating my mind. This chanting is agitating my mind. As if my mind was completely calm and pure before I started to chant. And it was the chanting that was agitating my mind. No, it was actually the chanting woke us up a little bit to find out how, to discover how agitated our minds are. And then we start thinking, well, maybe if I stop chanting, I'll become peaceful. Yeah, you'll become as peaceful as a person who takes, you know, anesthesia and goes unconscious. They become really peaceful, the same as a tree. Trees are very peaceful. I've never met a disturbed tree. Or there are rocks that have souls in them, but they're quite peaceful. They sit there all day long. They don't go anywhere. They never complain. They don't want it. They don't need anything. But that's not the perfection of life. Therefore, to see things in the proper perspective, then we can actually work according to that. We can try to work according to whatever spiritual perspective we can glean out of assimilating this knowledge. It may not be great. I mean, I see Krishna everywhere, and now I see, you know, you have two-handed Krishna and you have four-handed Krishna, your Matsav. No, we may not see like that. But at least we see something that at least we'll see the difference between a man and a woman. We keep on chanting. Most people have to take some time nowadays to kind of readjust their consciousness so they can see who's a man and who's a woman. As I said before, one of the Supreme Court nominees who became a Supreme Court justice in America, she was asked, can you give us the definition of a woman? And she said, no. She said, you'll have to ask a biologist. She couldn't figure out what's the difference between a man and a woman or something else. And she's a Supreme Court justice. So imagine everyone else in the country. You look shocked. Do you understand? Do you understand, Mataji? So, you know, after chanting Hare Krishna, coming out of the fog of whatever we were doing before, thinking, oh yeah, there's a woman. That's a man. That's an animal. And that's a tree. I mean, I had friends. They were, when I was younger, LSD came into vogue, which I didn't have very much experience of. It's probably why I'm half sane. But my friends, they were, at least some of them, of course it wasn't so common back then, but some of my friend associates in New York, they had friends, well, it's so expensive taking this LSD. So they came up with something called, I forgot what it was called actually. What's that? Maybe it was something, it was supposed to be 1,000 times more powerful than LSD. PCP, yeah. So they took it. And if they're still alive, I'm sure they're still on the LSD trip. Because they never came down. So they would have to do a lot of chanting to become reasonable. So that's also perspective. I mean, that's entry back into reality. If you can start discriminating that much, it's quite a bit of progress for some people. But perspective is not the only thing, although it takes some practice after hearing and getting some knowledge and assimilating and hearing it over and over again and then seeing how to apply it personally in our lives according to what we can understand. we get a certain perspective. Therefore, people are surprised that the devotees, they come to the temple. Sometimes new people come and they see people bowing down before a plant. People think, wow, these people are really special. First, they dance around the plant, and then they bow to it. But the devotees think it's completely normal because they have perspective of what's going on. But most people have no perspective whatsoever of what we're doing. Then they see the men are dressed in dhotis, which is they think are dresses. They can't understand why are these men dressed in their bedsheet. Are they really that poor? They at night they sleep in a bedsheet and they get up and they wear it for the rest of the day. When I first distributed books when I went to Dallas, Texas, in the southern Texas, in 1971 I arrived there. And at that time, Texas was known for being completely, you know, Texas? What's that? Well, that's the time when they had the Ku Klux Klan there, and you had the wrong skin color, you might wind up hanging from a tree. What's that? Yeah, or anything in between. There are no Indians. Yeah, there are actually Indians at that time. Red Indians. That was more dangerous than being black. So we arrived there with our... And of course, when we joined the movement, we handed over those dirty, non-devotional clothes. So we had none of them. We gave up our shoes too because they were all contaminated and we were wearing bathroom tongs. So in the South, they never saw such a species. South America, southern part of the United States. So we arrived in Texas and we were going in Dallas, Texas, and we were going door to door and immediately the police came and arrested us. Put us in jail on a Friday, which means we had to stay overnight, the weekend in jail. And finally, the woman came who made the complaint, and the complaint was, these are men impersonating women, because we were wearing a dhoti. Luckily, it was at night we were distributing door to door, so she couldn't recognize us. So although we still had our dresses on, she couldn't point us out. Were we the ones who were impersonating women or not? In any case, unless you can understand what someone is doing, or the perspective, what their perspective, you can't understand what they're doing or why they're doing it. So that takes some knowledge. But then when we, above perspective is conviction, that we actually realize what we're doing. We see it, but then we need some realization of it. We actually have to have some experience based upon that perspective. Perspective is also theoretical, but then we have to apply it. And when we apply it and we get a happy result from it, we become more conscious and we become more happy. We become free from some of our distress. Then we get conviction based upon faith. Faith means conviction. Faith that if we follow the process of Krishna consciousness, we'll actually get greater awareness and greater happiness. That's conviction. And then if we follow that conviction, then we find out what the realm of devotional service actually is. That it's not only chanting Hare Krishna, it's not only worshiping the deities, it's not only reading the books, but then we add on things like two other things, namely serving the devotees, developing loving relationships with the devotees. So that's called skill. And when we acquire those skills, then we become more aware of the 10 offenses against the holy name, like blaspheming the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name. We actually develop the skill of loving relationships with the devotees. Then we actually enter deeply into everything, into the holy name. We understand the philosophy better. Then we understand why the deities came here, why Krishna came here. So that skill, transcendental discrimination and expertise. We need transcendental discrimination to find out what people's needs are. As I said before, wherever we go because we have some need. Most people don't just wander around, unless you're an avaduta and completely liberated. People go to places because they have a need to fulfill. So if they go somewhere and people actually fulfill their needs, then they want to go back again. If you went to a restaurant that had no food, and you went back the next day, they still didn't have any food, how many times would you go to the restaurant? If you're hungry, you go to some place where they had some food. So people want to have their needs fulfilled. So that takes transcendental discrimination to find out what people really want. And then expertise, how to fulfill what they're desiring. So people have needs, they want to feel like they fit in. It's like how many black people would go to, do you know what the Ku Klux Klan is? How many black people would go to a Ku Klux Klan meeting? What's that? Yes, but voluntarily you wouldn't go there. Ask, can I join, you know? Because they wouldn't feel like they fit in. Just like they have satanic rituals. Probably here, even in Slovenia, they probably have satanic rituals going. But how many devotees go there to attend? There's no temple near me. There's no Namhata. I think I'll go to satanic ritual. Hopefully we can fulfill our needs, our inner needs. So people want to feel like their needs are going to be met. They fit in and they have something to contribute. Then what does it take? Then they have to find out what is the requirement to join, what they actually expect from me if I join, and what can I expect from them if I join? What will I get in return? So when we develop this transcendental expertise and discrimination, then we can actually develop the skills of transcendental relationships. Just like the most important skill that we can develop is the ability to hear. If a husband is speaking to his wife, and the wife is speaking, the husband's thinking, well, I'm not going to listen to this, I heard. And she say, well, I need this, and I need that, and I need this other thing. And the husband walks away. It's not going to be a very nice relationship because the husband didn't hear anything, doesn't have any idea what the wife wants, has no conviction to do anything for the wife, and therefore there's not going to be any relationship. It's not going to last very long. But if there's some skill in the relationship, then especially it's based on loving relationships, then after a while one becomes purified by the grace of Guru and Krishna, and it becomes spontaneous. It becomes ruchi. One gets a taste from that service, so a taste so great that one can't give it up, and therefore one develops a pure character and spontaneously enters into loving service to Krishna, with Krishna, with his devotees, and also to help the innocent. Because that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And then those things which are trying to draw away, those things or people who are trying to distract us from Krishna consciousness, we're not interested in them. We have the knowledge, the perspective, we have the conviction, we have the skill, and we have the character. We're not interested in those things anymore. And then one can happily go back to the spiritual world. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. Okay, you can go for it.
Okay. Hare Krishna. You said that we should tell people what they can expect from Krishna consciousness. So what can they expect? What should we tell people?
I don't know. It depends on who they are. We're expecting different things at different times. So, it's not... Just like when you join the Hare Krishna movement, what did they tell you expect? Did they tell you you should expect to have your hair shaved immediately? Eventually your hair will be shaved. You'll eat vegetarian food. You'll have to give up illicit sex, intoxication, eating, and gambling. Right now.
But actually, I was reading Bhagavad Gita, so I knew this.
Well, before you started to read Bhagavad Gita, if someone told you that. Generally, we start off a little bit more easy. That's why I was mentioning here, if they walk in here and they read this, you know, what? I think, my God. Probably the example is like with, Prabhupada was speaking to this famous musician at that time, Donovan. And he had his girlfriend there. And his girlfriend wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible. She understood what Prabhupada was saying. Donovan couldn't figure out what was going on, but she understood immediately. She was just, let's get out of here. So we have to start a little soft, otherwise people... And then gradually the expectations increase in the course of... Prabhupada once said about Lord Jagannath worshipping him. He said, if I told you everything required to worship Lord Jagannath, you'd faint. So I'm only giving you like 1% what it takes. Otherwise, we'd get very discouraged if we actually understood the whole thing. Little drop that we can digest, and then we might ask for some more. Anything else? We have another question. Yes.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj, for your lecture. Okay, I'm going to try to ask a question. So if we have made certain decisions because we feel that way, and we understand and accept the way we want to be on this planet while during this lifetime. And so why does our mind so manipulate with us? Even if we know what we want it, and we're sure we want to do it, still this voice, I don't know, Maya.
Well, because Maya is there to test us, how much we really want it. It's just like if a ghost goes, boo, we go, that's just a ghost, no worries. And we go, the ghost goes, boo, and we go, no, please. I'm innocent, don't hurt me. And then the ghost says, wow, I got a good victim here. Boo, boo, ah!
Yeah, well, the best way then is probably just to ignore it.
That's right. Okay. You got it.
Yeah, doing the right thing. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Sometimes we are trying to be nice devotees, like towards other devotees, as you mentioned, so we can develop that love for service. However, we don't really get the reaction we expect sometimes. We sometimes see like a blank space, or we just see that person is not very impressed by your you being nice. Yeah.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Yeah, and I usually realize that it's just me who wants the result, and I how can I How can I not want this anymore?
Well, I think when we get to the no more, immediately I'm going to get the result. We have to have some patience. Everything begins with patiently hearing. Like when Prabhupada was talking to one scientist, and the scientist said, can you explain to me, you know, in a couple of sentences what your philosophy is? And Prabhupada said, well, you're a scientist. You have your PhD in chemistry. If I went to you and said, can you tell me exactly what I need to know so I can get a PhD degree? Can you tell me in 2 minutes what I need to know to get a PhD degree?
Yeah.
You have to take some patience, cultivation. Hearing, assimilation, perspective, conviction, then skill, and then one actually develops the character and everything becomes clear.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.